And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
First and foremost, I want to say thank you to Jim Dolan and the front office for believing in the kid no one else would. Thank you to my teammates giving me confidence every single day. The belief we had in each other made this possible. Thank you our coaching staff, our medical staff, everyone that pitched in every single day behind the scenes. We really did it, dog. Somehow, some way, I knew we were gonna find a way to get this done. Most importantly, thank you to the fans. I'm not gonna lie though, y'all are some pretty hard critics. But we appreciate it. At least I do. Appreciate it a lot. Lastly, I wanna thank my family. Truly, without them, their sacrifice and everything wouldn't be possible. My inner circle, I mean, they keep me humble every single day. They don't let me get off track for nothing. New York, we really did it, man. We really did it.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is the Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today's Thursday, June 18th. This is episode 240. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Join our pages. Give us a look. If you like what you see, leave comments, questions. We'll get back to you. Tonight, we go around the world of sports. We're going to get it started. We'll start it off with the Knicks. Championship is only about 5 or 6 days past. Knick Parade was today down the Canyon of Heroes in Manhattan. It was a little crazy. They estimated over 2.5 million people were there. A lot of craziness going on in Manhattan. Guys, any thoughts on the Knicks?
What a great day. I mean, unbelievable to watch, to see. Don't want to be down there with 3 million other people. Too crowded for my personal taste. But to see 3 million New Yorkers show up to celebrate this team. You know, the Knicks are the team in New York City, in the New York area, that can unify everybody. Darren, you made the point before we started, there's like 500 Nets fans. Everybody else is a Knicks fan who's a sports fan here. And just an incredible sight to see. I know I had it on the background for work, so I got to see some of it. Didn't hear many of the speeches or anything like that. So let me get the keys, but it was more background noise. But, you know, again, just thinking back to Saturday night and the excitement and seeing them actually win after 53 years. I mean, still incredible to think about that game and the series and the run they made and the whole playoffs for the Knicks. Darren?
Well, I mean, yeah, like we said the other night, at no point did I think they were going to lose that game, even when they were down 15 or 16. I wasn't like guaranteeing a win, like, oh, it's a lock. But I'm like, they're going to be in this game. They're going to have every shot to win this game. And they did that the other night. There's a legit chance, Kev, that there are more Celtic, more Laker, more Warrior, and more Bulls fans than there are Net fans in this area. There's a legit chance that that's the case. That's how much the Knicks dominate against the Nets. And I'm not trying to pick on the Nets. I used to get season tickets for the Nets. I actually had season tickets for the Knicks for a little while. So I supported both squads. But when Kenny Anderson got drafted, we went to high school, Gino and I with him. You know, Joe Dorsa, Joe, who's been on our show with us a few times, we went and got, mini schedule for the Nets. And they were in Jersey back then. Parade is ridiculous. I'm not a parade guy. Know a lot of people. My brother-in-law, I'm one of them down there. Tons of people. Four people I work with were down there. I went to one parade once, 1998 Yankees. It was crazy. I got nowhere close. I said, I'm never doing this crap again. And that was that. You know, I mean, I'm now, you know, much older, so no reason to really enjoy that anymore. Just a couple final thoughts on the way the game ended. Any comments on the handshakes, fellas? The fact that the Spurs walked out. I didn't think it was a big deal because I've seen a lot of teams do this, but they seem to make a big deal that Wemby didn't shake hands. Kid's 22. I didn't have a problem with it. I don't know what you guys thought.
No, I didn't have any problem. Hockey is the only sport that you do the handshake lineup and everything else. No other sport. I mean, do you see baseball teams come out to congratulate the World Series champions? No. Do you see
football?
They sort of. Football seems to be more of a fraternity in some ways. That they
I
all
would say though that the hockey handshake thing makes that sport stand out in a positive way. Yep. Not to say that, not to insult Wemby or any of the other Spurs, but I actually look forward to the handshake line in hockey because they're hitting each other the entire time. It's not just, you know, a sport where there's a little physicality. These guys are trying to take each other's heads off and then they shake hands afterwards and give each other a hug half the time. It's kind of funny.
But, you know, but when you talk about, you know, no handshake, fine. But here's where the Knicks also, I think, had an advantage. Think back, you know, last year with Halliburton with the choke symbol. Mm-hmm. And think back 30 years ago with Reggie Miller with the choke symbol. And even go back to a game two with Wemby with the pointing to the head and everything else.
Yep.
With the Knicks win, do they have any choke signs? Do they point fingers at the Spurs? Do they do anything like that? No, they won with class. What you saw was Jalen Brunson walk over to the coach, Mitch Johnson, and shake his hands before doing anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how – I mean, to me, this team was so likable.
You know, maybe have an eye on it.
I didn't have a problem with it either.
I didn't have a problem with that.
Just to touch on Jalen Brunson real quick. So saw an interview with Jay Wright. And Jay Wright talked, you know, he's the coach of the Nova 3, obviously. And,
he's been everywhere this week. By the way.
And the one comment he made, he was like, you know, I told his parents that I wanted to meet with them because I thought he was ready for the NBA after the second season. And his parents came in and his mother said he doesn't have his degree yet, so he's not going anywhere. And his father said he's not good enough defensively yet, so he's not going anywhere. Wow. And the meeting was like 8 seconds, he said. He goes, I was the happiest guy in the room. Sure. I get to keep this kid for another year. I thought he was ready. Both parents told me absolutely not. He finished his third year, got his degree, improved a little bit defensively, and then that was that. It was just kind of a funny way that Jay Wright put that, but he was everywhere, and for a good reason. He took
absolutely
those kids and raised them up. Brunson busting on Hart. I mean, I don't know if you saw the interview where he talked about how Hart missed the breakaway layup. If that doesn't show you how close a team this is, because these are the type of things that divide locker rooms, but these guys are brothers more than that.
Yeah.
They're like we are to each other. They are to them. And then it was really interesting to see that. I thought that was one of the funniest things I saw for the weekend.
I mean, they were at Yankee Stadium throughout the first pitch, and then they show them up in the box or whatever. So they're sitting there and Brunson whacks Hart's hat, the brim of the hat down, you know, that stuff that we would do.
Yeah, it's just it was just like old friends talking and having a good time, and I thought that was great. I'm going to ask you guys Paul, one of our guys, was a little upset today that Patrick Ewing got his own vehicle in the parade. Gino, not upset at all, because I know that because Paul told us.
So, all right. So, first off, Walt Frazier, he led the parade off riding a convertible. He led the whole parade off.
As he should.
He was the only other Nick that was by himself other than Ewing. You know, the other, and I'll use this word loosely, Nick greats, Starks and Carmelo and some of the others that were there. Along with, you know, the announcers like Breen, we're all on one, you know, one float. But Ewing was by himself and Frazier was by himself. And Paul's point was, I don't know why he's by himself. And my only point to Paul was, if he's not by himself, who are you going to put? Because those are the other two greatest Knicks that are living. The only
here's my question, though, Gino. If Willis Reed's still alive, you figure he's in with Frazier.
Absolutely. He's one. Frazier's two. Right.
So the two of them. I put Frazier one, Reed two, but people might go the other way. I didn't see them play enough. I'm just going by my personal highlights and what I've seen, right?
I didn't see him play either. I go the other way, but I didn't see them play either. I
understand why.
I would go Reed Frazier, but, you know, again.
Okay, fine.
One and one A, you know,
exactly. Basically. Okay.
So if those two were together, would you still be okay if Ewing was alone?
Well, wait. Are you putting
Reed with Frazier in the same car?
Well, then at that point, then maybe Ewing is with the two of them. Then
okay.
Maybe you're putting all three of them in one car. Then.
Yeah, my whole thing was that, you know, when Paul brought it up, and I didn't have a thought about it, and then I've had a couple hours to think about it. I would have put like Ewing with the guys that he played with in that car. So I would have put the guys we've seen him in the stands with. I would have probably had him with Starks, and I would have probably had him with Houston. Okay. And I would have, that might have been my take, because he didn't win a title.
Yep.
And I know that's so mean to say, because a lot of great players didn't win a title. It's just a jerky thing to say, but I may not have done it.
All right.
It's splitting hairs, though.
So, but unfortunately, Willis isn't alive.
No, okay? He passed away.
So the current circumstances, for me, Deem, your two greatest Knicks that are alive are Frazier and Ewing. So if you want to put them in separate cars and everybody else, I'm okay with it. If you don't, that's fine too. I'm okay with that. But to me, that was I didn't have a problem with the way they did it. And, some people are going to tell me, Brunson needs to get in the conversation. We could discuss that at any point you want. That's fine. If you want to put Brunson now over Ewing because of the title, we can have that.
His father had something interesting to say. I don't know if you saw Rick Brunson's quote. He was like,
I did it
for 15 years. My son has done it for 4. Have my son do it for another 7 years, and then we can talk about it. Right now, Ewing is better than Brunson. I don't know if I agree or disagree. Patrick was a great Nick. I'm not trying to downplay it. It's very hard to compare errors. It's very hard to compare players. It's always difficult. So but he did bring the title.
We do have the recency bias favoring Brunson, the fact that he has a title.
Yeah. So, Kev, are you enjoying your title?
Oh, very much so.
So you made a comment that this was like your title. One of your teams finally won the other day.
Yes.
Okay, so do you consider the Islander years your title?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So two of your teams you have seen win titles.
Well, the Mets too. He saw the Mets.
I'm asking him.
Yeah, I consider myself a Yankee fan back then, but
that's true.
We all grew up in Queens and went to 100 Met games and went to 5 Yankee games.
Because you made me think about it a little bit,
and I have seen the Jets win.
You didn't see it. I don't want to hear it.
So I realized, I've now seen all my teams win. Yes, I saw the Yankees. The late 70s, I was really young. I don't want to consider myself that I saw those. I remember some of it, but I was really young. But the late 90s, yes. 2009, obviously. Now the Knicks, 26. The Islanders in the early 80s, absolutely, because I went to some of those games. My uncle had season tickets. I was active. We went to practices in Kaniac Park, the whole bit. Washington, 83. I do remember the 83 Washington Redskin one. 88, obviously. 92, definitely. So I've seen them all, right? So, Kev, the 2026 Knicks, are you upset that there's only one homegrown player? I know you like your homegrown players. Are you upset that there's only one homegrown player? Because, I know it irks at you that, championship has to be won with your homegrown players.
Oh, it's so different in basketball. Come on.
I know. It's different. Basketball's different.
Let's go through the minor league system of basketball. Then we can talk about homegrown. We're talking about two opposite things now. Now you're being ridiculous. Okay, there's no minor league system. There's G League guys who don't make it.
You got the championship. It's okay.
I've seen three. I saw the Yankees, obviously, like you, G. I the Knicks here. And then, I saw the Calgary Flames in 89.
I was thinking about it.
The Jets have not done anything.
For the record, I was a couple of days old. That's a joke. They have one in my lifetime. I was a couple of days old, so it's not like I saw them.
Listen, when Kev said it last week, he made me think about it, and I realized, oh, my God, I actually have seen one now in all my sports. That's going to be a rarity.
I'm going to take this conversation slightly askew here.
Go ahead.
So the Knicks winning this title, and listen, we were all hoping they get to the final this year, right? I mean, anything happens, but did any of us realistically think they would win the NBA championship? No, we really didn't before the season because the West seemed so much stronger. Yeah. Could this be the start of a New York renaissance with sports titles? And the reason why I ask, I'm just saying, the Yankees have been close, but now the starting pitching is better than it's been, okay? You figure they make some moves. They're winning without Judge. few things happening, all right? In hockey, Matthew Schaefer all of a sudden gives hope that the Islanders have one of the most exciting young players that people are going to want to come and play with, right? That, I'm just saying. Yeah. I'm not saying that they're the favorites right now, but at the same point in time, one or two players and a world-class goalie that they already have, and suddenly the Islanders are competitive. The Rangers have talent. They didn't show it this year. They have a great coach. They have a great goalie who got hurt. They had a bunch of different things. But you don't feel like the Rangers are far away. The Devils, I'm not going to count, but they have young talent as well. We can get to that at another point. The Nets have like 37 draft picks over the next couple of years. Who knows what happens, right? The Giants just hired a legendary football coach that all of a sudden makes them look respectable, and they could climb themselves into the playoffs if Dart is the real deal.
Right.
Right? The Mets are much more talented than what we've seen this season, as we know. I think a GM move is probably something that's necessary as well as a manager move, but you have the players and you have young pitching and they seem to be developing it. Mm-hmm. Then there's the Jets. We'll leave them to the side. But is there a chance, and I love the Jets, that's the team I want to see win more than any of them, but is there a chance that we could start seeing a few titles coming over the next 5 years in this city?
God, I hope so.
I can buy it. I can buy into it, Darren.
I really, because of what we saw from Schaefer this year, it gave me that hope. And again, I'm a Flames fan, but I like the Islanders to see them go to that next level. I really do think that they can, because this kid's a star and he's a star at 18 and he's only going to get stronger and only going to get better. The Yankees have been so close. And right now the starting rotations is when everybody gets back and healthy is as good as anybody's going to have. They're going to have every chance in the world if they get just one extra reliever to help them out. And if Judge comes back, because they're winning without him. So you feel like the Yankees are there. You feel like the Knicks just did it. You feel like the Islanders are on the way. You feel like the Rangers could do it. You feel like the Mets aren't that far away despite what you're seeing right now. There's a lot of teams that have a chance over the next couple of years, I think, to make New York give us that run again that we had maybe in the 80s a little bit with and then the early 90s and stuff with the
I can buy into it there.
With the Yankees being good in 94 along with the Rangers, along with the Knicks and stuff like that. I don't know, just a thought.
I can buy into it,
all right, just a thought, boys, just a thought.
All right, any final Knicks thoughts?
Yes, I have some gems for the Knicks.
Go ahead, go for it.
First I want to just mention, you know, the finals. This was the most watched final since 1998, averaging 20.6 million viewers. You have to go back to Michael Jordan's Bulls to be higher rated. Just for a comparison, last year, Indian OKC averaged 10.3 million, exactly half. That's what getting big markets and San Antonio being Texas and San Antonio with Wemby and San Antonio with five championships has that pull also.
And the New York market.
A combination of that.
The New York market, man.
The New York market, you make such a huge difference.
And it wasn't just that. It was the way they did it. They won all those games in a row. They gave people hope. Yep. And then the comeback against Cleveland, which was epic. And then, obviously, once you got into it and you saw the comeback in game four, it was no way people could avoid watching this team.
Yep. So a couple of statues to finish up with the Knicks. OG, you know, averaged 20 points in the postseason, 56% from the field, 49% from three. 94 players before this year, or including OG, 94 players have won a championship and taken at least 75 threes. OG is the most accurate over the playoffs. Nobody's better. Huh?
Funniest thing about it is he was awful in game five.
He
couldn't hit water from a boat. But you know what? He was so he basically won game four. Him and Brunson, the guy, I'm just saying. It's funny.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to mean with that. It's funny.
Now for about Jalen Brunson, just to show you the echelon he's at now. 4 years as a Knick. He's got 300 more points in the playoffs than anybody else in the entire NBA.
Oh, my God.
Second fastest guard to 2,000 playoff points, only behind Steph Curry. 26 points per game average in the playoffs in his career, and 50 wins in the playoffs before the age of 30. In history, you go Curry, Jordan, LeBron, Durant, Shaq, and now Brunson.
That's a hell of a list to join. That's a hell of a group, Kev.
That's a hell of a list, isn't it?
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
So those are a couple of gems I found about the NBA. Anything else on the Knicks?
Well, just one last point, just because you were going around. Do you realize that the Dallas Mavericks in the 2018 draft, after they drafted Trae Young and traded for Doncic, had Doncic and Brunson, and now neither one of them are there? It's just, a great job by the front office in Dallas. Congratulations. Great job. Unbelievable, by the way. You just can't make it. I know he sold the team, but, you know, I'm just picking on him anyway, because he always walks around his little holding the trophy when he talks about his TV show. But anyway.
So we also have another champion in hockey. So I got some more gems about the Carolina Hurricanes, who beat Vegas 3-0 in game 6 to win the cup in 6 games. Took the last 3 after being down 2-1. I've uncovered a few things here. Number one, Nick Ehlers, game 1 scored the first 2 goals. Game 6 scored the very last goal of the series. So he scored the first and the last goals in the series. Only one of the players done that.
Oh boy.
2006 Edmonton Oilers. This guy scored the first goal in game 1, the last goal in game 7. Fernando Pisani.
Pisani?
Remember this guy?
I do, because I hate Edmonton, but yeah, you know. But he was a marginal player. He was an okay player.
Yeah.
He was not first line talent, we'll put it that way.
No. But you know, him and Ehlers now hold a little connection there.
Yeah.
Bookend goals. Wow.
That's pretty wild.
Jordan Staal becomes the oldest Conn Smythe winner.
Mm-hmm.
He also scored a goal in each of the first 5 Stanley Cup Finals games.
Yep.
First guy to do it since Jean Beliveau in 56.
Yep.
And before that was Rocket Richard in 51 and the great Cyclone Taylor in 1918.
Oh, Cyclone.
He also won 68% of his faceoffs. Just to put it in perspective, he had a really great series.
Yep. Brandon Bussey becomes the 3rd rookie goalie with a shutout in the Stanley Cup clincher. Matt Murray in 2017 for the Penguins. I'll put a little asterisk there because he did finish off the 2016 playoff run, but he still kept his rookie status for 2017. So technically he's a rookie, but he had playoff experience. Before that, you have to go back to Earl Robertson in the 1937 Red Wings.
Wow.
And last but not least, Jacob Slavin. He won the Olympic gold medal as part of Team USA. He won the Stanley Cup. Only one other American has done that in the same year. And I think we all know the answer to that one. Gino!
Ken Morrow.
Yes.
Absolutely.
A couple of Canadians have done it now, but you know who cares about that? We're talking about the U.S. So we're talking Ken Morrow.
Kenny Morrow.
Jacob Slavin. Any thoughts on the Stanley Cup Finals? I mean, I know it got overshadowed a little bit with us with the Knicks and everything else. It was the night after they won, but
Carolina had that 8-0 start, which was amazing in the playoffs. Only one team had ever lost that went 8-0 in the first 8 games. And Carolina, despite being down 2-1, came back. It was actually a really good series. It was the 5.2 million average viewers, so obviously nowhere near the NBA. That's across ABC and ESPN. Most since 2019, though, the 5.2 million. So they did get a bump. After the first 3 games were all 1-goal games, Carolina won by 2 goals in the last 3. First one being an empty netter, and then they controlled game 5. Oh, and they won by 3, I'm sorry, in game 6.
With the empty netter, yep.
3-0 with another empty netter. Tortorella's already been replaced in Vegas. If you'd have told me that Brandon Bussey would be kind of the unwritten star going into that series, we were talking about the battle between Hart and Anderson. And all of a sudden, Brandon Bussey came in relief, never relinquished it. You know, honestly, 22 saves for the shutout. And Carolina was just a better team. I'm not trying to insult Vegas. I felt like they controlled play. I thought they were just a little bit better. G?
And it was that 4-goal period. That was
when they lost.
That was it.
Yeah.
It was 4 goals in the second period for Vegas, 4 goals in the third, 3 in 39 seconds, which I don't remember even seeing in a regular season game. I'm sure it happened many times. I just don't remember it. And then you figure they have all the momentum, and the goal goes off his back of his skate to beat him.
And Brind'Amour actually said it. He said after the four goal second, he just needed to give Anderson a break. And Bussy came out and was so good, he had to keep him in net. I mean,
yeah. No, absolutely. And they ended a 20-year drought. So congratulations to Carolina. Listen, it's been a good team for a lot of years that consistently makes the playoffs, consistently grinds it out, consistently was just come up short against Florida or Tampa, whoever happened to be that team that year. And, you know, listen, it's a good team, a lot of good players. They have the good Sebastian Aho. And what are the odds of having two Sebastian Ahos in the NHL? I'm sorry. It's not like it's Bill Smith here. But nonetheless, we move on from that. Congrats to the Panthers. To the Hurricanes. That's all I got. It's a great, great series. Great hockey.
Yep.
All right. We'll move over to a little World Cup. We got the World Cup going on. We're a week and a half in already. Kev?
Yep, everybody's played one game. We're starting the second set of games with groups A and B today. This will go on, including tonight, for 6 days. And then they've got the finishing up next week over 4 days, the third set of games. And then a week and a half from now, Sunday, would be the start of the knockout round. So that's when it gets really interesting. We started last Thursday, but no, let's talk Friday first, U.S. opening game. They took care of Paraguay 4-1. The own goal by Paraguay to give the U.S. a lead 1-0 off the cross by Weston McKennie. And then Balogun took over, scoring in the 31st minute and the 5th minute of added time. As the announcers would say, especially the British ones, I've heard this phrase, right at the stroke of halftime. Not, I tell you, I love listening to these English announcers calling the games. What they come up with is just great. And then Reyna got the goal back after Paraguay scored, and they went 4-1, outshot Paraguay 16-9. On goal was 6-1. To me, this is one of the best games I've ever seen the U.S. play in the World Cup. Darren.
Yeah, Balogun's two goals were great. I think he's on pace to be the best striker we've ever had. It just the U.S. has not had that position. I mean, you can sit there and talk about Donovan and Dempsey, but they weren't the striker. They were their midfielders that would move up and play forward, but they were not strikers. We were sitting there waiting for Jose Altidore for years and waiting for all these guys to kind of emerge, and we just couldn't find one. And Ballo seems to be the guy that's getting it done. They control possession of this game. The only goal they gave up was typical U.S. giving up a goal off a goalie kick, and they just seemed like not to know who was going to handle it. And all of a sudden, you know, just that. But we'll talk about the preview that occasional lapse that this team has. That was it right there. That was the moment. And Reyna's late goal was about as pretty a goal as you'll see. I mean, kicking it off the right foot. When it was lined up to go to his left foot off his instep and just whipping it into the corner. It was gorgeous. They kind of coasted home. Play Australia tomorrow. Socceroos won their first game. So it was upset over Turkey. Not a huge upset, but it was like 28 over 22, something like that.
Yep. Turkey A.
Turkey A. I'm going with Turkey A. I'm not doing it.
They played really well. I was texting you guys during that match. They played excellent that day.
Yeah, I agree. They were outstanding. And, you know, again, you said it. It's not an understatement. This is not a team in World Cup play or in international play that's ever looked this good. They've never looked this good against even Mexico and Gold Cup type play. This is the best half I ever saw by far. Probably the most complete game.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm still worried about the goaltender.
Yep.
The keeper's not world class in my opinion yet. Hopefully Freeze turns into one, and maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't seen it yet.
And the big thing to keep an eye on, the U.S. plays Australia Friday afternoon. Yep. The big thing is going to be if Pulisic is ready to play or not. He got stepped on or something on the back of the calf. He came out at halftime last Friday. He's been doing a lot of individual work. Calf wrapped up. We'll see if he can play tomorrow. Or by the time you listen to this, it'll be today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm going around the rest of the World Cup. Starting last week, last Thursday, kicked off Mexico with a 2-0 win.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, the other host also opened up Canada. A goal in the 78th minute from Lahren gave him a tie against Bosnia, which was Canada's first ever World Cup point. And then today they went out and they dominated the match anyway, but thanks to a red card by Qatar in the 34th minute and another red card in the 53rd minute, their Qatar was down two men and Canada blew them out 6-0.
Yeah, one was an old goal. Canada was just – they were the better team to start. It didn't matter, but Qatar was – you know, they didn't even try to mount the comeback. They were just trying to play defensively. And the goalkeeper never went back, you know, beyond two-thirds of the field. No. And, you know, there was never a threat at all, even when it was 10-11. When it got to 9-11, it got ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, Jonathan David with the hat trick. We'll talk about other goal scorers in a minute. The thing is, with the down two men for Qatar, Canada, that allowed them to have the most goals ever for a CONCACAF team. And it also tied for the largest margin of victory by a host nation.
Wow.
So, impressive stuff for Canada. Saturday, we had a couple of decent games, but we were overshadowed by the Knicks. Sunday, we had two impressive performances, Germany 7-1. I mean, that game, we were watching them talking to my wife, who's partly German. I'm saying, come on, these cold, ruthless Germans, can't they show them a little mercy here?
They showed absolutely nothing. But they just kept pouring it on Curacao.
Yeah. Sweden, also impressive, over Tunisia 5-1. Tunisia, so disappointed, they fired the coach after the game. And then Ivory Coast with a big goal by Diallo, who plays for Manchester United, so he's got talent. Late goal, 90th minute to get the win over Ecuador.
Ecuador hit three posts in that game. Ecuador kind of controlled the first half of that match, and they just couldn't put it in. Ivory Coast, late game. That was one of the night games.
Yeah,
Ivory Coast put it in late. In a game that you thought would be kind of an even matchup, and it kind of was. Thought Ecuador kind of controlled a lot of it, and then Ivory Coast got the goal that put them up for good.
Yep. Monday, first time ever, we have four draws in the same day. I'm not going to go through them all, but the most interesting one was Cape Verde and Spain. Cape Verde holds Spain to a 0-0 draw.
How many shots?
Shots, 27-6 in favor of Spain.
I figured that you'd want to say that one.
On goal, 7-1 in favor of Spain. Possession, 3-1. The expected goals for was 2.1 to 0.2. Because, you know, we got to get analytics in soccer as well. But the 40-year-old goalie for Cape Verde, Vezina, I mean, my God, he made some incredible saves and was just all over the place. And you could tell Cape Verde was just, I mean, almost like, you know, I always think back to a horse racing call. They tie by a desperate foot or something.
It was Harvard ties Yale 29-29. It was that. Harvard beats Yale, I should say, 29-29. It's just one of those. My wife, who works for a Spanish company, like all the bosses were watching the game. Miserable. Cape Verde. She's kind of funny. She's like, was there a game today? I'm like, yeah. Did Spain play? I'm like, yeah. She goes, oh, they were all watching. No wonder they were all. Did they win? I'm like, no, they tied. Like, oh, so it wasn't that bad. I'm like, no, they were supposed to win this game by a lot of goals.
Yeah, a lot of goals. I mean, it's almost like Cape Verde won 0-0.
Oh, no doubt about it.
They did. In gaining that point, they did win, Kev.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Some thought they wouldn't get a point in the entire, you know, the entire bracket, so that was big for them.
No, Uruguay side.
Kev, I think I lost you for a sec. Well, Uruguay did tie with South Africa. So, or was it Saudi Arabia? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So we had that. I mean, Kev looks – you've never looked better, Kev. We didn't hear a word you said just now, but you were gone. Go ahead. Start again. You started with Uruguay and lost everything.
Okay, I was just going through the ties there. Uruguay, Saudi Arabia, yeah. Belgium, Egypt, and Iran, New Zealand. So that was a record-setting day for ties in the World Cup.
Absolutely.
Then the stars came out to play.
It was actually very good, by the way. That was an entertaining game, the New Zealand-Iran game. That was very good.
That was a lot of fun to watch, yep. Then the stars came out, opened up with France, 3-1. Kylian Mbappe with two goals. He gets his brace. Gave him 14.
And Senegal's a good team.
They
beat them.
Yep. And then Norway comes out, and Erling Haaland gets a chance to play his first World Cup game, and he winds up scoring two for Norway in a 4-1 win.
But that ain't nothing.
And then Messi says, "Yeah, that's nice. Hold my beer. Argentina comes out and wins 3-0. All three goals by Lionel Messi.
38 years old.
About to be 39 in a week.
Yeah, he's still 38, but still, you're right.
Ties Miroslav Klose with 16 World Cup goals. The great German.
Close.
Close to his personal
friend. Make him American. We'll call him Close. We're fine.
Records, you know, he tied that one. It's his sixth World Cup appearance. That set a record for about a day before Ronaldo tied it, playing for Portugal. He also is now the oldest and the youngest to score for Argentina. Wow. He's been playing so long.
Wow. I remember his first goal, too. I remember that vividly.
Yep.
He was, because it was him and Crespi, and I didn't know who was going to be the better player coming up for Argentina, because you'd heard so much about both. And Messi scored first, and I was like, okay, maybe he's going to be the better guy.
That's actually pretty wild.
Crespi, whoever it was. Well, I forget if it was Crespo or Crespi. I get confused. But, you know, it actually went really lopsided. Not that Crespo had a bad career, but Messi's the greatest of our lifetime anyway.
Yep. And what's interesting for Algeria, the goalie is a guy by the name of Luka Zidane.
Mm-hmm.
Remember his dad?
Yeah.
He's the great Zidane. Yeah. So, you know, second generation there in the World Cup, although Zinedine played for France.
Yeah, he was a Frenchman.
Yep.
He's the guy that headbutted the Italian in the chest, and the Italians got the beat France in a game that France dominated.
Yep. And then we get to Wednesday, and Harry Kane says, "I want in on the action." So he put two goals in for England in the 4-2 win. That was a very entertaining game as well.
Yeah, if you're just so biased for England now, it's ridiculous. I don't want to hear it.
I hate England. I'm Irish.
Not about that, but you're so EPL. I mentioned another league. You're like EPL.
It's all about EPL.
EPL.
And then the latest game winner we had, Ghana, beating Panama. 95th minute, Jurenki scored in a 1-0 game.
A game that Panama also controlled the first half of pretty well. Ghana came on. It was raining. A lot of stuff was going on in Toronto that game. And, you know, great goal, great win for Ghana. Yep. The Black Stars find a way.
So I've been very invested with this World Cup. I think with today, we've got 28 games played now. I think I've seen about 26 of them.
You're a little ahead of me. I don't get to work from home. But
I know.
The Japan-Netherlands game is the tie was very interesting as well. A really well-played game. And you got to admire the Japanese fans that clean up all their trash at the end of the game. Come on. I mean, you know, Americans, the people in Dallas didn't even know what to do. They're like, the Japanese just clean up after themselves. It was freaking amazing. But I got to ask you a question because you've watched a lot of this, and I've watched a chunk of it. I'm sorry.
You mentioned that. Wasn't Jameis Winston there, and all of a sudden he sees it being helped, and he starts to help the Japanese? He started helping
out too.
Absolutely.
I love Jameis Winston.
There's nothing not to. He's more exciting than anybody in the NFL when they let him play.
Yeah.
So here's the question. We have a ton of soccer to come. A lot more teams in it. Does it feel watered down to you?
No.
Does to me. I feel like 32 out of 48 teams advancing. It's like it used to be that group of death. There's going to be one of those teams was not going to make it. Now you know all three are going to get through. It just doesn't feel like – I just feel like everybody's going to get out to the next level. Now it's going to be seeding. It's going to be – and I know you have a point. You know, it's just going to be different seeding. So you might have to play a much tougher opponent in the next round in the knockout. I just feel like everything in sports is getting watered down, including – now, all of a sudden, the hydration break, even when they don't need it because they want to run commercials. You got to love this crap. Gino.
I completely agree that it feels watered down, yes.
Gino never agrees with me. I might be right on this one.
I have not watched full games other than the U.S., okay? I've watched a lot of pieces like I'm watching now Mexico-Korea, okay? Yep. However, what I have seen shows me that the games look like some of these games look like they are watered down. And the other thing is that these are game ones. What happens when we get to the third game of this and they've already clinched? They're already in. Are we going to see bench players play? Because at that point, they're already in. We know they're in. They know they're in.
Well, here's
and it's to get from 48 to 32. It's not even next. So I have no idea what this is then going to look like, Darren. So you may have a point.
Yes, I agree. Watered down the fact that you got 32 advancing. Yeah, the play, I've enjoyed watching it. I feel like a lot of the games have been competitive. There have been very few blowouts, and you know, watered down as far as watching it. No, but I understand your point. I think watered down when you get the fact that 32 advanced to the knockout. Now, Gino, yes, you're going to clinch, but you want to be first in your group so that that knockout game, you're playing a third place team more than likely. So I think there's still a lot to play for in the third game.
From the games you've watched, Kevin, you've watched a lot of them.
Yep.
Can you already pick out four teams that you know aren't going to make it?
Oh, of course. Well, but then that would be the same for any other World Cup.
Well, I feel like that we have a few weaker squads. I don't feel like all of these. I don't think Curacao gets in. I know it's a big deal for that country, and I don't think that Uzbekistan finds a way, and a few of the others. I feel like maybe wouldn't normally belong in the World Cup. So maybe it's better to have more inclusion and make the world's game better. I'm not countering your point, but like one of the things that's interesting now is when Algeria plays Jordan, right? Mm-hmm. And they're fighting for that third spot, which the third spot used to be nothing. Now they're fighting to try to get to the advanced round where they're going to get their butts whipped by Germany, you know? But it's like it's one of those type of scenarios where there's – I don't know. I just feel like there's –
some of those games are going to feel like
too many teams are advancing to me. I don't know.
Okay.
Some of the games next week, when we get to the third games, are going to feel like those 16 seed play-ins for the right to play the one seed mm-hmm. in the NCAA tournament. I think that is a fair point, and that's probably a comparison we can make.
But that's not bad soccer. It's just going to be. My point is not even about this round, but when we get to the knockout round. And an undeserving team, the eighth best third place team, is going to play Germany just because they're 1-7-1. So I'm making them the one seed right now. It's probably France, probably the best team. Either way, and they get blown out 6-0 in a knockout, which we would never normally see. That's where I feel like we could get away from us a little bit. That's why we're not going to really see, I don't think, great soccer until we get to the 16, in my opinion.
Okay.
I don't know, just a thought.
Yep.
And that's all I had for World Cup.
Okay.
U.S. Australia tomorrow, huge game, 3:00 in the afternoon in Seattle, so it's noon there. Hopefully they play well during the day as they did during the night.
All right, let's move over to the U.S. Open. So the 126th U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club in Southampton. Oof. Last time it was there was 2018. Winner that time was Brooks Koepka. Par 70, 7,440 yards. And by the way, guys, there is a par 5 16 where it is 640 yards, how it's playing. I don't even think I can hit 14 balls 640 yards, let alone par 5 640 balls.
That's crazy. That's just ridiculous.
It's unbelievable.
That's par 7 for us.
I know. At least par 7, Kev. Right now, Wyndham Clark.
He went nuts.
Yeah, he's at minus 6. So it's only through 16. I guess it was because of darkness they came in, Kev?
And high winds and darkness.
Okay.
They had a two-hour delay this morning for fog.
Right. So
everything got pushed back. That's why the afternoon tee times didn't all finish.
Yeah, so he's through 16 right now. He's at 56. So he's at minus 6. And then the next group, if I could just go down the list quick, it's Sam Stevens, Ryder Cowan, Max McGreevy, Matt Fitzpatrick, Dustin Johnson, Gary Woodland, John Rahm at minus 2, and then a huge group at minus 1, including Rory and Bryson and, you know, a whole group there.
Olberg. Your guy Olberg. Well, Bryson hasn't done anything in a major all year, so it's nice to see him in the leaderboard at least.
But he did have a 427-yard drive today.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It went over a road. It went over a road.
Yeah.
Scotty Scheffler's at plus two. Any thoughts on the U.S. Open, guys?
Course looks brutal. The minus six is very impressive with the wins that they had today.
You know, we've seen it before with Shinnecock. The course is hard enough. Let's not make the pins impossible. That's the one thing I hope for. Let's not have guys, you know, I heard a story this morning. I think it was like, I'm blanking on the names. But they're out there playing, and the guy's walking by, and they're on the one hole, and two-footer for par. He winds up putting and goes rolling off the green into the bunker. He's got to come back on, and all of a sudden he's got a seven on a par four when he's got a two-footer for par. You know, that's the type of thing we can't have. You know, Shinnecock is difficult. Shinnecock with the wind, there's enough there to protect the course. Even if they just keep the greens fair. And the winning score is not going to be much more than two under. I think Clark will come back to the field some.
They've always made this course particularly brutal. I mean, I know they take pride in the U.S. Open, and part of me likes it to a certain extent. But you want to reward good shot making as well. You don't want to take away good shot making where it's all a version of luck of how it's going to roll off. I mean, that's always where, you know, I don't know. It always makes it a little more challenging. Gino loves this.
I love seeing them struggle three or four times a year. It's only three or four times a year I see them struggle. I know, Kev, I know, but I don't want to see minus 20 every damn tournament. That's all.
I want to see even par to two under win it. Yeah. That to me shows that the course is difficult. Let's not make it ridiculous.
Wyndham Clark at minus six is something I didn't think we'd see.
No.
And Rowan as an amateur being there at minus two, very impressive.
Yep.
Coming out and playing there.
I want to see someone win the U.S. Open with plus two, Kev. That's what I want.
That's fine. You know, if it's plus two, but like there's 15 players within like three strokes.
Everybody else is plus six and the winners are plus two.
That's ridiculous.
You don't want to see plus 18.
The round of the day had to be Kevin Mitchell. He shoots even par. Nice, easy, quiet round, right?
I saw this one, yeah.
He plays a back nine first, goes out in 41. Plays the front nine coming in, 29.
Wow.
Nice 70.
Nice even 70. First player ever to go over 40 and under 30 in back-to-back nines in the U.S. Open in the same round.
Oh, my goodness.
41. 29 for a 70.
My God.
You got a ton of players. Tomorrow's going to be crucial to see where everybody ends up as we go into the weekend. Guy like Scheffler, plus two right now. He's had a tendency to start slow. He's probably where he wants to be to a certain extent. Guys like Fowler came back at plus one. And Justin Thomas is there at plus one. Dustin Johnson's up there a little bit, I believe, right? I mean, I think two under. Two guys up there. He's one of the guys up there. And, you know, Matthew Fitzpatrick, who's been playing well only through 16, but he's minus two. And you got a lot of big name. Rory at minus one and Joaquin Niemann, who plays well, minus one. And Henley has been good. I mean, Fleetwood's been good. I mean, there's a lot of names that could make a run here at this leaderboard, which is – that's my Father's Day present. I want to be left alone with my kids around me. I'll be cooking anyway. It doesn't really freaking matter. I'll be grilling anyway. And I want to go in and out and watch my golf, and I'll be a happy guy. I want to see five of the six names in that leaderboard of people I know and a couple others that are making runs that I know from the back, and let's see what we can get out of it. That's what it's all about. This is the ultimate Father's Day present, getting to watch the U.S. Open. Shinnecock should make it exciting.
For Father's Day, my daughter wants to take me up to Binghamton to watch the Rumble Ponies.
Congratulations.
Because her favorite Met, Lindor's on rehab assignment for the Rumble Ponies.
Have a great time. I'll be
I'll be catching the last couple of holes there.
I will be watching it in my glory at home with my. I'm going to brunch with my father and all families, and I will be home, and just taking it easy. But have a good time up in Binghamton, my friend. And anything else for you guys with the Open? Gee, any odds that we want to look at?
No.
All right. Good enough.
It's already in. So a lot of them are gone at that point. So.
Gotcha. We're a day late than we usually are. Yeah. I got a couple of little treasures for you guys, though, based on golf. Adam Scott made his 100th consecutive major championship start. He and Jack Nicklaus are the only two players ever to do that.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's it. It's an amazing feat. You don't think of Adam Scott, but he never misses, never gets hurt, always there. Sometimes usually makes a nice little run on Saturday. You get to see him for a little bit, and then usually doesn't find a way. But he's won one major, so I'm not going to take it away from him. Quick football one. It's a weird one. Ramondre Stevenson is only 1,784 yards away from becoming the Patriots' all-time leading rusher.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he's fifth right now. I mean, Sam Cunningham is the all-time leading rusher. Jim Nance, who we didn't see, and not the Nance that we know. Tony Collins, Curtis Martin, four. But he's only – it's like two solid seasons, and Ramondre would be the – talk about a team that hasn't had that great running game. Just thought that was an interesting stat. June 17th, 1994, the date was yesterday, okay? All this happened on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
O.J. Simpson, white Bronco chase. Everybody remembers that. Knicks Rockets, game five. Arnold Palmer plays his last ever round at the U.S. Open. The 1994 World Cup opener between Gino, Germany, and Bolivia. I know you were glued.
Oh, I was glued.
And it was the day of the Rangers Stanley Cup victory parade. All that happened yesterday, because today's the 18th. Usually we do the show on the 17th, but we did it on the Wednesday. We did it on the Thursday this week. All that happened on the same day. All five of those things happening at once. Pretty wild.
They did a great ESPN 30 for 30 on that day.
Oh, did they? I never saw that.
That was ESPN always does a great job. That's one of the ones they've done.
I did not know that. Only one player in baseball history, guys. 3,000 hits, 600 doubles, 400 stolen bases, and 250 homers.
Tony Gwynn. No.
Not Tony Gwynn, who died this week in 2014.
Wow. Holy mac. So what are the numbers again, Darren?
3,000 hits, 600 doubles, 400 stolen bases, 250 homers. Kevin's, I know Gino's like, give me already, but Kevin's thinking, so I don't want to mess with him.
No.
I'll say and you'll nod. Craig Biggio.
Biggio? Wow.
All the stats kind of fit, though, right?
Yeah. I was trying to think of the stolen bases. And the usual guys just didn't come to me as stolen base guys. Biggio.
Definitely a compiler player, but he did have a lot of great stats. And just one with the big sexy, and then we'll move on to the next category here. Bartolo Colon in his career swung at 610 pitches. His helmet only stayed on for 27. Big sexy. And now those are my buried treasures for the week, boys.
Including his home run, right?
The helmet never stayed on for that guy. He always swung so hard it fell off. And they had John Pasella. Remember when we were kids? The guy that used to pitch and the hat fell off when he pitched? His hat fell off when he swung. So nice little combination.
All right. We will go over to baseball for a little bit. So before today started, Yankees at 45-27, 8-2 in their last 10. They now have a 3.5 game lead on the Tampa Bay Rays. They have the best record in the American League right now. Mets at 33-41, 5-5 in their last 10. Kev, only 5.5 back of the wild card, by the way. Can you imagine?
Yeah, but they've got like 2018 in front of them.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter because they're winning tonight, baby.
Darren, Yankees.
Yeah, the bullpen blew one tonight, but they've been playing really good without Judge. They were 9-4 going into this game tonight. Listen, the offense is starting to click. a little bit. You're starting to see Bellinger really become part of this offense. Chisholm really starting to hit. You know, McMahon hit a homer tonight again. He finds those solo shots every now and again. You know, you feel good. Spencer Jones seems to be getting a little bit more comfortable. Like to see, you know, a little bit more from Dominguez here. Hopefully we can start to see that. You know, him staying healthy and him doing all the things he needs to do. Again, it's going to come. The rotation's good. Weathers threw well tonight, and he's not a guy that you figure will be in this rotation in like a month from now. So there's a lot of things to like about this team right now. Again, the bullpen makes you nervous. Bednar seems to have refound himself, though. He's been better down the stretch. Obviously, Devin Williams didn't do what Kev wanted him to do just now. You want to tell me what happened? You shook your head so violently, I have to look.
He gave up the hit to Justin Crawford, 6-4. Now we got two on, two out with Kyle Schwarber up.
All right.
Well, up two.
Well, hopefully they find a way. and it's first and second, so there's no real place to put them. You don't want to put the tying run on. But anyway, so, I mean, when you look at the Yankees right now, you know, you feel like the team's, you know, except for Judge, which is going to be an extended timeout, is starting to get a little bit healthier, but they're showing offense without him, which kind of a pretty good sign, I guess, G, right? I mean, I don't know if you're thinking.
Last 30 days before today, McMahon has hit four home runs, had his fifth today in the last 30 days. Bellinger, Rice, and Jazz have five home runs each. Goldschmidt has six home runs.
He's been amazing, by the way, Goldie. Okay. His resurgence has been unbelievable.
And, you know, Volpe has hit pretty okay. You know, Caballero's hit well.
Even Ali Sanchez has contributed a little bit better than the catchers have.
Yep. I mean, if we get a catcher in here that can hit consistently, the offense is really, you know, purring.
Alvarez just took a shot to the groin. That was so nasty, by the way. I'm sorry. It was about a bad foul tip I've seen. He stumbled in front of the plate. I took a delay just to make sure I saw it right. I'm sorry. Sorry, Gino. Yeah.
And the last 30 days, Bednar, zero earned runs. He's converted all three of his saves. I mean, you know, you're getting all the starting pitching you need and more at this point. You know, Cole looks good. Schlittler's had a bad outing, but he's looked good. Rodon, you know, Warren, I don't know what the hell else you want. You know, one of these bullpen arms actually pitches well. Other than Bednar, this team is going to, you know, do everything it's doing plus more, you know, right now.
Like, if Hill doesn't get overused, he could be a guy. And if, you know, Cruz, if he gets out in front of you, he didn't have it tonight. But if he gets out in front of you, he could be dangerous. So there's a few things like that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you got to be happy with where the Yanks are right now. On the other hand, Kev.
The New York Metropolitans?
Well, why not?
I guess a good thing, you know, Bichette's gotten hot. He's having a monster June until tonight, 0-for-5 tonight. But all of a sudden, his average is up to 250, which doesn't sound like much, but from where it was, is a big improvement. Soto's been red hot. You still see Benj and Ewing, who I think they've readjusted a little bit, and they've been consistently 250s to 260s right now. You know, playing like rookies, but looking like they have some hope. The pitching, you know, Manaea, at least this was two second start tonight that looked good, because goodness, we need it. McClain threw a gem the other day, but the rest of the rotation, with Scott hurt, and you know, now we've got Senga back in the rotation who looks shot, and we've got openers, and we've got five inning Freddie, who so annoying to watch.
Gave a lot of money to him.
Yeah, great. And the best win the ball game.
Kev, here's my question to you, Kev.
Yeah.
At this moment, I know how many teams are between you, but how many games out of the wild card do you have to be before you are not sellers at the trade deadline?
If you're still in last place in your division, I'm a seller. And that's where they still are. I mean, they've still got a couple of teams to climb over in front of them in their division.
There's no judgment, just a question.
And who are you selling, by the way?
And that's the other problem, is that Peralta can get you something. Minter rarely, more rarely than Minter, but you know, a couple of lefty arms in the bullpen. Bichette, maybe, but really, that what, like you said, Dan, what's there to trade in this team?
You're trading guys that you'd like to keep as your like base going forward. You want to keep Peralta if you can. The lefty arm, I understand. I agree with you on that. Not that you want to do it. Is Alvarez a chip?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the biggest question on this team because he's the guy that he's young still. He's been hurt. He got pinged in the groin tonight, which didn't look good. You know he's got the pop. You know he's got the ability. Was he 24, 23, somewhere around 24. There? Yeah, I mean, but you got to figure you could. That's probably the most desirable guy that you might be willing to get rid of. You're not getting rid of Benj. You're not getting rid of Ewing. You're not getting rid of any of these young guys because you like what you see so far. Unless there's a young superstar coming back, you're not doing it.
Can we get anything for MJ Melendez?
I'm sure. He was every team in baseball had a chance to get him, and nobody wanted him except for the Mets.
Eric Wagerman?
Yeah.
That nine home runs hit last year for Miami's the everyday first baseman was big. How about Zach Short?
Lady's doing a good job in Washington. That's all I'm going to say.
He's got a whip of 1.7.
Love Lady's tearing it up down there.
Been lucky. This is the type of that I can't stand. Zach Short just got released by Detroit. We had him in for a few games in 24. The guy was hitting 167 this year. He's had 600-plus at-bats in his major league career and hitting 172. He had 230 in the minors. Why are we wasting our time with Zach Short? And I know it's not just Zach Short. I mean, it's just that type of player that Stearns just loves to recycle these crappy players. We've seen it with the relief. With the last three guys in the bullpen, we've seen it with the bottom of the roster. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's frustrating watching guys like this.
If the Mets do not make the playoffs, do you want to see a manager and GM change this year?
I want to see it change regardless if they make the playoffs or not.
Now you sound like me and Gino.
I'm so tired of
Yankees make the playoffs every year. We can't wait to get Cashman out.
I'm so tired of this guy who's smarter than everybody else.
Right?
What the hell's his plan?
All right, here's and I brought this up only – I didn't want to start this, but I brought this up only for one reason, okay? And that is if you are somewhat in the hunt, you're not a seller. Okay, fine. Is Stearns a buyer at some point?
I don't trust him to make any trades.
Okay, but
I don't want him as
– No, wait. So I'll flip the script, okay?
Yeah.
You guys really, in the next month, go from 5.5 back in the wild card to 10.5 out, okay? You're going to have to do something. You're not going to take this whole team through the whole season. You're going to have to get rid of something.
But Darren's point, and I totally 100% agree with it, what are you trading? You've only got a couple of guys worth anything to anybody.
Well, I mean, listen, Bichette's a player option.
Well, Vientos is a guy that you could deal. Vientos is a guy you could decide to deal. Beatty's a guy you could decide.
What are you going to get at this point?
Yeah, it would have to be a lot of moving parts to make that deal.
Yeah. It's triple A player. It's triple A. It's minor leaguers.
It's minor leaguers. It's 20th to 30th ranked players from an organization. You're not gonna get any blue chippers for these guys at this point.
But you're gonna have to do something.
Why? Why bother?
You're gonna take the whole roster throughout the whole year into September. I don't know if I can take you in September then, Kev, talking about the Mets.
Well, Kev will be despondent after the Jets are 0-3 and the Mets are 20 games out.
People asked me, I said, thank God we have the Knicks to distract me till mid-June. I think this is why I'm so into the World Cup for the next month, because it gives me something to watch besides the Mets. And that'll be mid-July in his training camp.
I got you. Listen,
I mean,
I'm excited about the NFL as well. I know I'm ready for it already.
I mean, you guys know me. I didn't think they were a playoff team to begin with.
Nope, I picked them to make it. I'm the only one of the three of us that thought they would get in.
I didn't think they were a playoff team. I didn't like the way this team was constructed. And, you know, Simeon's hitting 220. There's a shock. Never saw that coming. Polanco's hurt.
Nimmo's doing okay in Texas, by the way.
Yeah. Polanco's hurt. Shocking. Roberts hurt. Shocking. Now, the only good thing about Roberts' injury is it gave Ewing a chance to come up and play almost every day here and show that he could be a contributor. I mean, we've got some pieces for the future. The outfield looks set for a few years until Soto has to move to DH. But you said in the outfield, it looks like, you know, infield, you know, Lindor will be back. Bichette, if he opts in, I mean, you know, he's got 46 million reasons not to leave. I don't know if anybody else is going to give him that much money. I mean, you know, there are a couple pieces away, but, you know, it's also the fit and the chemistry, and that's what Stearns has no idea what to do with. And the rotation is another year where the rotation's just been banged up and hurt and not enough depth. And the relievers, you know, Weaver's been great, surprisingly. Raley and Minter have looked good. Brazoban's been terrific for them, unbelievably. You know, it's the last three guys on the team. Well, you know, when you keep dropping and DFAing and bringing this guy back and up and down and up and down, what does that do for a clubhouse chemistry?
Well,
doesn't it have to weigh on you eventually?
I agree with you. I you know, it's a hard team to like right now. And, you know, I don't think Mendy's a bad manager, but, you know, he hasn't done it in the last 2 years, and he's not going to get another chance.
Mendy's got to get through these teams because, you know, two straight games where Marcus Semien's using a challenge, 1-1, two outs, nobody on in the second inning. Oh, it's a close pitch. They called a strike. Let me challenge. Oh, it's a strike. Oh, I blew a challenge ready in the second inning. Nobody on, two out. Why the hell are you challenging at that point?
Because you're dumb.
Because you're dumb. Thank you.
Any other baseball points, guys?
I have a couple of I had a couple of interesting games from last week.
Let's talk about it.
It was a week ago, but Tampa Bay 7, Boston 5. Boston batter struck out 15 times. The top three, Duran, Rafaela, Abreu, all struck out three times each in the first three play appearances. First time since at least 1900 that they can find that that's happened.
Let me say this. The Red Sox being 14 games below 500 is like the happiest thing I can be. Anyway, go ahead.
Friday, we mentioned him last week, Jacob Mizrowski. Friday with the most dominant Maddox game that you could come up with.
Yeah, exactly. Ninth
complete game, one hit, no runs, no walks, 15 strikeouts, 95 pitches, 74 of them strikes.
I saw that, Kev.
15 Ks on 95 pitches seems almost impossible.
Yeah.
Usually when you're striking out that many, you're throwing a lot of pitches. Like Kerry Wood threw like 150 in the game he struck. You know what I remember?
Yeah.
And he still got 20.
Last eight starts now, 0.17 ERA. Eight straight game of eight or more strikeouts and one run or less allowed. Longest streak since at least 1893. Just to go back. And then Sunday – you know, they're showing some of why the PCL seems like it's always a high-scoring league. They played in the Las Vegas minor league stadium there. Just give a little taste of Athletic future baseball. Colorado 23, the Athletics 9. Surprising staff are there. That's Colorado's most runs ever in the game in franchise history. They play in Coors. They've never put up that many in Coors.
Remember when they had, you know, the fat, well, leave it there, Vinny Castilla, and they had Dante, and they had all these power hitters in the middle of that lineup down there in Colorado. I'm surprised they never scored more than that.
But the luckiest winner so far this year, Tomoyuki Sugano. Five innings, nine hits, eight runs, all earned, but got the win. So those are some of my favorite games of the week.
Okay. Sounds good. Anything else, boys? College World Series starts up Saturday, North Carolina versus Oklahoma, for those who care. It's been a pretty good series, but these two teams were dominant once they got to Omaha. Neither one of them took a loss, so great stuff there. And we are going to wrap it up. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren, Kevin, Gino, wonderful, wild, wacky world of sports. A wacky world where we lead off with a parade. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. You know, listen, we post a lot on social. You know, we had, I don't know, 6,000, I think, viewers on the last post. Keep it up. Like it, share it, follow us, like us. We're so close to 1,000 followers, it's ridiculous. Be part of it. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.